All right, welcome you to Porch Talk. This is an Untapped and Vinyl. Per usual, I have Monk here with me, and going on 2 years now?
2 years now, we've been saving a seat.
The honorary chair has been filled by none other than one of our favorite guitar pickers, Taylor Hollinsworth.
And songwriters.
Thank you.
By the way. Yes.
Thank you.
And we are at the wonderful house that Beer built in Tuscaloosa, Druid City Brewing. Shout out to Bo Hicks and all the wonderful people here.
And Seth, we got a shout out to Seth,
yep.
And Kevin, and even Bob made an appearance tonight.
Even Bob.
Love Druid City.
And so, man, we're here to talk beer and vinyl, and man, we got a blip show tonight. That's a little something to ride home about.
Man, I don't think I've been more excited about seeing a show than I am about seeing a show, maybe in a long time. I mean, the last time I was this excited was when we had Early James at the Columbus Arts Council.
Yeah.
And I had listened to that record till I knew every damn word to it. And then when he finally got there, I was like, oh my God, just like higher than my expectations were, you know? The same thing, I think, with the Blips, man. I have listened to that. We listened to it all the way over here today.
It wasn't so long ago that you and James shared a set, right?
Trying to think, when did
like
we share?
3 weeks ago?
Oh yeah, you're right. Yeah, at Avondale. Duh. Totally. I was like trying to think of something.
It was Dead Fingers too, right?
Yeah, Dead Fingers and Early James. That's right. Yeah, yeah. He's phenomenal live. It's like he's got that voice. It just carries. It's like, you know, and his guitar playing's great. Yeah, I actually just saw him last weekend. I played a gig this past Friday night at Little Italy, cool little restaurant in Five Points.
Mm-hmm.
And that's where, like, a lot of musicians hang out, especially Early James's crowd.
Yeah, Zach Austin.
Zach and Taylor Honeycutt,
Adrian,
all of them. And they were all there at the gig, and I was hanging out with James afterwards, and we were talking about y'all. We were talking about you and his show at the one you were speaking of.
Yeah.
And then he said his girlfriend, Cammie, has an art show.
Yes, she does.
Coming up.
I can't remember. That's like October, I think.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Because I was like, yeah, Monk, just hit me up about something in Columbus, too. That art, what is it, once a month through the summer?
It's the
third Saturday.
Art and Music Festival that we have in Columbus with Munson Brothers.
Yeah, I'm excited about
really
that.
It's a really cool thing, yeah.
And that's been a fun thing, too, because, like, and Luke Wood is the first, and I've been talking to Birmingham musicians about, why don't you come over to Columbus and play on the third weekend for us, you know, getting some of that talent over there, and just more exposure.
Right now, you got that tropical storm down in the Gulf, so the thing may get shit-canned on.
Fingers crossed on the festival this weekend too. You know that had been.
Oh late. Yes, for real. Yeah.
Is there a man? We got to get the Blips over there sometime. Would there be a good spot?
Yes, Munson Brothers.
Munson Brothers,
sure.
Would be
the
best
place. Okay.
It's an outdoor beer garden. Yeah.
Okay.
It'd be perfect.
People would come out. You think?
Yeah. They got a kind of a built-in crowd there. Yeah.
Depending on
what night they got you there. You know, Friday night.
Well,
Saturday
Columbus,
night would be
we
good.
Could do it on a Friday or Saturday.
Yeah. Columbus is such a weird place. It's, you know, it has an Air Force base, and so every few years it's kind of like a college. And we have the W, which is a college, so, like, the culture and the people are continually shifting.
Yeah.
And so, like, every 2 or 3 years you have to win back over a brand new crowd.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And right now, like, Munson Brothers, they have the Air Force and those guys just locked down.
I've always kind of said that Tuscaloosa's a little bit like that, too, because, like, I've been playing in Tuscaloosa for, you know, nearly 20 years. I mean, actually, I think 20 years.
Yeah.
And because it's a college town, the crowds keep turning over.
Mm-hmm.
And, like, there's been eras when it was packed shows, and there's been eras when it was not too many people.
Yeah.
But I never fear it will change again.
Yeah.
You know what I mean?
Exactly.
It's like, you know, and I feel like it's been kind of a good era again lately. It seems like.
Yeah, I think with, like, coming out of the pandemic now and, like, shows are coming out, like, not just for the musicians, but for people who like going to shows. People are
Everybody's
just hungry.
Hungry for it.
They're hungry for it.
I can tell,
Jinx,
man,
you and a Coke.
Okay. Every show I've played has been packed, you know,
whereas
they used to not be. I mean, because I play so much around, especially around Birmingham, like, you know, when you play that much, it's hard to get a crowd every time because people are like, well, I'm going to go see him next weekend. Or, you know, and, and that eventually spreads out through how many people you got that come to see. But lately, man, since the pandemic, it's just like everyone is just partying, man. People are partying. I'm like, this is fun.
Yeah. I think it's going to be that way tonight here
in
Kansas City.
The last show I called of yours at Avondale, and that was a special crowd because it was filled with just the singer-songwriter types, musicians of Birmingham.
Yeah.
And it was like just a big party. It was Will Stewart and you played that night.
Yeah.
That was a hell of a night, too.
Yeah. That was, yeah. And, you know, Will Stewart's outside. With, you know, he's
he might be making a cameo appearance.
Oh, good. I told him. I was like, you should. You ought to pop in on this.
I said all of y'all should come on in here and sit with us for a little while, you know.
Okay.
Just, I mean, with us, you're part of this whole Untappd, but they don't come and guest.
Oh, dude.
You're part of this.
I told him. I was like, I mean, we got to check with them, but, you know.
Pop in.
I was thinking.
We are down.
Yeah, I knew y'all would be down. So.
Yeah.
I told him that.
So how did you keep sane during the pandemic?
Man. Trails, right?
Do what?
The trails.
Yeah, exactly. I actually cut. So my backyard, I back up to the woods in my neighborhood. And my neighborhood is kind of like every street is a dead end.
Yeah.
So we're up against Red Mountain on one side of it. You know, when you cross over into the Birmingham side. So I'm on the other side. And Crestwood South is what my neighborhood
is.
And so, yeah, I just one day, actually, right when I moved into that house, I started looking at Google Maps because every house I've had in the last 10 years or 15 years, I've had some kind of access to wilderness in my backyard.
Yeah.
So it's kind of like I have to have that now, you know.
Sure.
But now I'm there to stay. But there was no kind of trail system or anything. It was just woods. But I pulled out Google Maps, and I looked how the roads laid out, and I started doing the little measurements, because you can see distance on the map if you zoom in. It gives you a little, little key or whatever that tells you the distance between them. So I realized, like, man, I mean, I could cut a really legit hiking trail. And I don't know who owns all the land, but I'm just going to do it until somebody stops me.
Well, what was crazy is, like, as you got going, the neighbors got involved, right?
Now I have a bunch of people in the neighborhood helping me out. I haven't even met them all. I'll go hiking down the trail, and somebody will be out working on it that I've never met. And I don't even say, hey, it's me, I cut this trail. I just, like, hi, how are you? I don't say anything because, you know, I don't want to get, you never know who you're talking to. I don't want to get in trouble or something.
Yeah. Yeah.
So I'm just like, man, appreciate you out here working on the trail. You know, I love this trail and being in the neighborhood. And it seems like everybody does, you know. It's like, it's so cool. So I cut, one trailhead at the end of one of the dead end streets, and then there was another trail, I'd say a mile and a half to 2 miles from mine already, around the hospital up there, the old Montclair Hospital. There's some trails back there, and they go all the way to, there's a Jewish community center, which is very popular in town, the JCC. They have mountain biking trails through the woods, and it's all the same woods.
Yeah.
And man, I cut all the way to it, so I connected the trail to theirs, and then I met the lady who cut the other trail that connected to the JCC trail, and she was nice as can be. You know, hers are more dug out for mountain biking. You know, because mine have some weird little steep thing. You couldn't ride a bike over it. You know.
Well, a real mountain biker probably could.
I mean, some
serious person.
Definitely, some people.
You ever watch those videos with, like, they do the GoPro cams and, like, they're going down the mountains, and it, like, almost gives me a heart attack watching.
Yeah, man. When I was a kid, actually, there was a guy that I lived in these apartments, and there was a guy that moved in with his wife, and he was getting his doctorate at UAB. His name is Mike Holland, and his wife Susan Holland, and they became the neighborhood parents. They just kind of adopted all me and all the kids on our street would just go to their place all the time, and that was our base for several years. and he was a huge mountain biker. So he got us all to, we slowly all got mountain bikes, and he would take us mountain biking. And I remember he was like that. Like, he probably, he moved to North Carolina years ago when I was still a kid. I mean, he's probably shooting the GoPro videos. He was crazy, man. He would do some crazy stuff. And of course, we'd all just follow him along, you know. So I remember doing stuff that I definitely would never consider doing now. And I seriously hope my daughter doesn't do. You know?
Well, dude, I do want to take time to plug this with the Birmingham Humane Society and the work that not only your wife, but you and even Will has gotten involved in.
Yeah, man. The Humane Society is amazing. I mean, really, my wife, you know, she works there. She works hard there. I'm just an occasional volunteer.
Y'all do transports up to Wisconsin?
Yeah, I drive the transports. But see, there's a guy named Bob there. There's a guy named Mike. These guys are really the ones to give the credit to, because they do, you know, they're retired and this is their passion now. And they do all the
cross-country stuff, right?
Yeah, and I do that too with them, but I don't do near as many.
To the capacity.
You know, I don't do near as many. I might do, during COVID, about halfway through COVID, that's when I started volunteering, and I did about 1 to 2 a month at that time. But since it's all ended, I haven't done any. I've just been slammed with gigs and work. But
I mean, you've been putting out music of your own. You did the Blips. I mean, you've stayed busy since it's like, okay, we're free, let's go.
Oh, yeah, man. And I told them that, too. I felt bad because I was like, I don't think y'all understand how busy I'm about to be. But, you know, I mean, also, I'm a dad, and Ava's still at home, so I got that, too. You know, and that's Kate works full time, so it's a lot to balance. But,
yeah.
But I do intend on doing more drives when it lines up. They send, you know, they have probably a list of 10 to 20 volunteer drivers that are on the email list, and then they send out the transports for the month. So, and you respond, hey, I can do this trip to Wisconsin. They're all like that. They're all long.
Yeah.
There's two shelters in Wisconsin that they work with. There's one in New Jersey, there's one in, I think, it Massachusetts or Maryland or somewhere up in there.
Mm-hmm.
There's one in DC. There's I'm trying to remember. I think there's a few others too. And they don't have the stray problems that we have, you know. So they will take in it. You know, you take 40 dogs up at a time, 30 to 40 dogs up at a time. I like to talk about this because when people donate, you know, the place runs on donations.
Sure, yeah.
And my, you know, I've known about the Humane Society for a long time. But
how long has Kate been involved?
She's been there now for about a year and a half, I think, maybe to 2 years. And when she started working there is when I learned all this other stuff that they do, this crazy amount of work, like, these transports of 40 dogs at a time. Mm-hmm. And sometimes they'll have them, you know, there'll be one going on Wednesday and one going on Friday and then the next week, Tuesday. And then, I mean, a lot of them. They're saving so many animals. It's crazy.
That was going to be my question. It's like, it seems like we're always exporting dogs from here to there.
Because we have crazy stray problems. Yeah. You know, people don't. All these people don't get their dogs fixed, or they
didn't watch The Price is Right and listen to fucking Bob Barker. Is what it is, you know.
Yeah,
spay and neuter.
Spay and neuter. It's just, right. I remember
Because I've lived it. Like when I lived in McCalla, I mean, we lived at the end of a dead end, and stray dogs just up on our porch all the time. It's like people just, I don't know. I guess they get these dogs. And they have litters of puppies, and then whenever the litters of puppies are done, they just drop them off, and that's their solution to the problem, rather than have them spay or neutered.
I can't tell you, like, growing up just on dirt roads, because Kennedy's a small town, it's nothing to find a cardboard box full of puppies, you know?
Yeah.
You know, there has got to be a better way, and, like, even, like, you put me on this, is like, when I go to get my next dog, it's definitely going to come from the Humane Society.
Yeah. Oh, they're there, and they need homes. and they can't get them.
Speaking of which, is your latest dog, is it fully healing yet? Has it got all its...
Simon.
Yeah.
So we've had him for about a year now, and he still is having skin issues. He's still healing. Like, he had mange so bad. I googled severe mange, and I couldn't find a photo
he's the new image.
Yeah.
I mean, probably so.
Because like, when I saw the first picture, like, you posted about him, I was like, I've never seen a dog so ate up by mange.
Oh, yeah. It was, he didn't have any hair on his body. None. It was all just scabs and just eaten up. I mean, it's the most pitiful looking animal I'd ever seen, you know. And this dog, though, is awesome. I mean,
good on you.
I mean, honestly, man.
He's protective, too, dude. That dude loves some Hollingsworth.
Oh, yeah, he is. He is. He's a, man, he's such a good dog. We've actually just took home a puppy recently, too. And it's another pit bull puppy because most dogs in Birmingham strays, like Kate said, probably 70 to 80% are pit bulls.
Pit bulls, yeah.
Or pit bull mixes because that's just mutt as you can get.
Yeah.
But they're the best dogs.
They really
are.
It's
so funny how they have this like
bad rap
stigma attached to them of being these like aggressive killer dogs, and they're like the nicest dog. Like if they're like that, they were trained to be like that.
That's
because
right.
That's not how they are.
You know what dog you're most likely to get bitten by?
A little small dog.
Chihuahua?
But like when you talk big dog, it's a Labrador or a Golden Retriever.
Oh, really?
But they're very mouthy dogs anyway.
Yeah.
And so sometimes when they grab you, they might be playing, but you are more likely to get bit by them.
Yeah.
Pit bull's near the bottom of the list.
Really?
But they have that stigma about them.
Yeah.
Same with Rottweilers.
Yeah.
They're not bad dogs.
Well, I mean, I love dogs, but I'm a cat guy.
Yeah.
And so there was a litter of four cats that were found under a house in Starkville, Mississippi, and I'm rescuing two of them. My fiance and I are from the Starkville Animal Shelter. So
cool.
We're giving two little kitties. The other two, I think, are going on a transport. I wish I could have all four of them, but, I mean, I live in a small apartment over
four
Main
cats
Street.
Yeah,
four cats.
So
you
got to
have, you know, two litter boxes at that point, and I just don't have room for two litter boxes even, you know?
And I don't know, by the way, I've been meaning to tell you this, and I know it's sad to bring it up, but Sushi, your cat that you loved.
Yes.
I can't remember if I told you, but, you know, we have a cat named Mushi. And it looks exactly like Sushi.
Really?
I gotta show you some pictures.
Yeah, I'll have to show you one of the cats that we're fostering.
Looks like that, kind of.
Her name is Memphis Marie.
Yeah.
And she's a tortoiseshell.
Okay.
And she's got like a distinct line going down the front of her face, and one side of her face is kind of more black than the other.
Yeah.
So she looks sort of like Sushi just because she is, because all tortoiseshells kind of look alike, you
know?
Yeah,
yeah. Well, that's why
Mushi
I'm saying.
Mushi and Sushi,
Yeah. But...
Oh, I was heartbroken, man, when I found her that day. Oh, my goodness.
That's the worst. I lost my, before Simon, my favorite dog I'd ever had was this dog, Cammy, also rescued, of course. And
no relation to Cammy, the...
No relation
to Cammy Winley.
James's girlfriend. Yeah.
No Cammy Winley involved here.
But this dog was named Cammy because when I didn't find her myself, when the woman that we got her from, she found the litter. Well, she put collars on all of them, and Cammy's was a camouflage collar, and this woman was like a saint. She rescued so many dogs. She was like, it was like her own shelter in her backyard.
Jeez.
And in her house. I mean, when we went to pick it up, she had probably 30 dogs that she had rescued.
Wow.
And she said her husband was nuts because of it, but like, she's like, I can't help it. I just, this is what I do. And but Cammy was the best dog ever, you know, just the perfect dog. And she died not this past October, but the one before.
Yeah.
And man, I cried like a baby,
man.
I mean, I was torn up,
man. It's a boy and his dog, right?
Yeah. I buried her in my backyard. I put her in my dad's old sleeping bag. He passed away when I was a kid. So this is a special sleeping bag.
Sure.
And I wrapped her up inside it, and then me and Kate went
outside. That right
there
said a lot about how special Cammy was.
Oh,
right
yeah.
There, you know?
Exactly.
Yeah.
Exactly. I mean, she was my baby, and she lived by me. I mean, she walked. She just stayed with me. When I went downstairs into my studio, she always came with me. There are tracks on records, plenty of tracks on records.
She's on it.
She's quietly in there, and she doesn't make a sound. And I'm talking about on any kind of microphone that picks up every little noise.
Yeah.
That's how quiet she was. Yeah. She would just rest by my feet, and I would sit there and play the guitar, acoustic tracks, vocal tracks, whatever. And that dog is in the trap. You know? She's quietly breathing.
She heard all the magic.
Yeah. And then there is, I think it's on the end of Tap Dancing Daddy, maybe. One of the songs around then, you can hear her shake her collar
yeah.
During the song. And it was perfectly timed. Yeah. I didn't edit that at all.
It's actually a tambourine.
Yeah, it sounds something like that. Like, you wouldn't know because in the... What's crazy is just how perfectly timed it was, you know? And I left it exactly like that. It's pretty cool, though, to know about.
Well, dude, before we move on to just what you've been up to and, like, what you have coming up, going on is I want to plug your art as well. You've been busting that out. So tell us a little bit about your journey into the folk art scene.
Man, I mean, I don't know how far my journey's gone into the scene necessarily.
But you got art shows coming up.
But I have some art shows coming up that, I mean, I appreciate you reaching out to me for that one. I've got one at Rojo coming up, not this Thursday, but the next. And yeah, I'm like really into making art right now. I'm trying to, I actually told Kate, I was like, you know, I kind of want to shift into focusing on art more than music.
How long have you been doing it
now? As I get older, you know, I started when Ava was born because, like, I just needed that outlet. I was at home all of a sudden a lot, and I had a baby sleeping, so I couldn't really play music, you know,
without waking
her up. So I just kind of started just drawing with Sharpies and stuff. So all my first stuff was just kind of like low budget, shitty looking art, but it was psychedelic drawings, you know.
I
would go to the thrift store and I would get like either old paintings and draw on top of them, or I would just take the frame and use and put something inside there and then do my art on it. And it was in, so I went from Sharpies next to paint pens, and then from there at some point I started buying house paints and pouring it. So now I've really figured out my thing. It's taken me a long time, but...
Yeah.
So it's taken me, you know, Ava's 8 now, so it's taken me 8 years of doing art. But I'm really proud of what I'm doing now.
And even with the
piece... I feel like it's my own thing. Yeah. Truly me, you know.
Yeah.
With the piece that I have of yours at the house, I mean, that's usually the eye catcher. Like, when folks go into, like, my little studio room.
Yeah, which one did you get? I forget.
It's got the bullet teeth.
Oh, yeah.
And it's
got
the red frizzy
hair. The punk rock gnarly looking piece. Yeah.
It's like, what is that? And I was like, that's my buddy Taylor, man.
Yeah.
It's gnarly, ain't it?
Yeah. That one was real gnarly. Yeah. Yeah, I've got a bunch of cool ones that I'm working on right now that I'm into, you know.
Soundtrack.
I'm hearing the blips.
They're cranking up. I told them I'll be in here. Y'all just put my shit where you need to put it. I'll set it up right before we play.
Well, all right, man. One thing I wanted to bring up is you recently got back from a short tour with Jimmy Doug Holmes.
Mm-hmm.
So tell us a little bit about that.
I mean, I wouldn't really call it a tour. It was basically...
Two stop.
Yeah, he got hired to play Oklahoma City, and I played with Jimmy Duck probably three years ago at the Baton Rouge Blues Festival. They hired him then, and they hired... At that time, it was partial Dexateens. It was Brian on drums.
I remember when that happened because I think... Ronnie...
Yeah, Ronnie was in it. Yeah, it was Brian, Ronnie, me on guitar, and Jimmy Duck leading it. This time, they reached out to me. I think Brian couldn't do it, maybe. And he was like, do you have anybody that you think would do well? And I was like, oh, man, I got, got the roll dog.
I'm going to pull out the Rolodex.
Yeah. Oh, yeah. So I got my regular crew. This is Macy, my wife's brother. and Ross Dog, who plays with me in my solo thing. He plays in Dead Fingers. He plays with me in 93 Beaters, which is our psychedelic country cover jam band. We call it Renegade Outlaw Psychedelic Country or something. I forget.
Yeah.
You know, we jam all kinds of gigs, but man, he's just solid on the drums. You know, he's just perfect how I like people to play. He's not flashy. He's very keeps the rhythm. You know, it's all about the rhythm. So I think Jimmy Duck was into it, man. It was
it was the
coolest gig, though. Was really just, it was just a practice for the Oklahoma City show, which was a big show. It was downtown in the big park, you know, outdoor theater.
Yeah,
yeah.
So a lot, it was like the city put it on, probably a concert a month for the summer or something like that, summer series. And so it was, you know, it was a big audience. But the night before, we decided to play at his juke joint, which you've talked about on the podcast.
The Blue Front.
The Blue Front, yeah. And that, my friend Jonathan Purvis did get some video of it, but I don't know if he got the whole thing, which I wish we had, because that was a special.
He was in his element then.
Oh, dude. You know?
There's nothing like Blue Front energy, though.
Oh, man.
Was y'all inside or on the porch?
We were on the porch.
Oh, hell yeah.
And it was killer, man. It was killer. And, you know, anytime he plays, there's the locals come and put up lawn chairs or they sit at those picnic tables. So there was a little bit of an audience, you know, but we were mostly just – so it was just so my guys could get a feel for playing with Jimmy, because he doesn't play like anybody. I mean, you know, he's going to tune his guitar super low and weird, and it's not going to be to a tuner, so he might be in between B and C. Yeah. And you're gonna, you gotta tune, you know, all the strings have to tune to him by ear, which can't, you know, what sounds easy for professional musicians can be challenging on a big stage when you've got your hearing sound through monitors. Sometimes it sounds like the note pitch is changing from one side of the stage to the other. So I experienced this at the Baton Rouge Blues Festival.
Yeah.
Because that was my first time to play with him. And I remember his manager, Michael, was like, "Hey, man, you might want to like tune Jimmy's guitar for him before the show." And I was like, "Well, what is he tuned to?" He was like, "Oh, I don't know." So I asked Jimmy, "Hey, Jimmy, what tuning do you use?" "I don't know.
He
just tunes it down and plays
it. Some say D flat minor, some say E minor."
Yeah, it sounds like an open. No, man, he was pretty low. I mean, I think he might have been lower than D. Open, like D flat minor, maybe. It does seem like he has a minor string in there.
And the trick about it is, like, I've had two lessons from him, is like on the G string, and this is what blows everybody's mind with that bentonia. It was invented by Henry Stuckey, who taught Jimmy that tuning and that style.
And Skip James is the big one, right?
Skip James was right beside Jimmy. They were all learning together.
He was from Bentonia.
That's right.
Yeah,
and so it's the G string, and what throws everybody off about that Bentonia style is when you put your finger on the first fret, it's major, but when you take it off, it's minor.
Yeah, that's right.
And so you're always
in
between.
Well, I know that because I play that same tuning but major.
Yeah.
So I go like this for the minor, my hand down, but I can't do a minor on the open chord.
Yeah.
But that's like my tuning, you know. I mean, I use that on Ring Around Saturn, tons of that Dead Finger stuff, tons of the country western stuff is that tuning, but major. But that's a very common tune, open tuning.
Yeah.
But the minor's pretty, I wasn't sure if that was exactly what it was, but I guess it is.
Yeah.
Okay.
There's a good
now I know how to tune it.
I'm not a guitar player, so I'm just sitting in the basement.
There's a great write-up, and it's the only one I found that got it right. It's by my buddy Ryan Lee Crosby out of Boston. He'll be down in Bentonia this weekend for the festival.
Yeah.
It's D flat minor, and he breaks everything down, and he even tells you about the myths. He's like, a lot of people will say it's tuned to this, but they're not. That's not it.
Yeah.
And because there's a lot of differences, but like anybody that's played with Jimmy will tell you, be like, I might not know exactly what it is, but it's not that,
yeah.
You know?
Yeah.
I mean, that happened. I remember years ago, I was working for Okra Magazine. Not Oprah, Okra. People confuse it all the time. But I went up to the Blue Canoe in Tupelo,
yep,
to interview Leo Bud Welch, mm-hmm, and saw him play. And I've never heard anybody more off on their guitar sound ever in my life. It was almost painful. And this, yep, was just, I think it was like 3 months before he passed away. And his manager comes up, a young guy that kind of found him and was like, hey, we need to get you out there because you're really good. You're one of these legends that's going to, you know, last and stuff. So he gets up there, he tunes his guitar, and he gives it back to Leo Bud. And he sits there and he goes, that shit ain't right. And he starts retuning it back to where it was. It's like he's got this sound in his head. It's like to think about like Sadell Davis. He's got, oh, yeah, this sound in his head. He doesn't really tune.
That's,
he
right,
just knows what the, hey, sound, man, that he, hey, did the one day he was practicing.
Yeah.
He knows exactly how it's supposed to sound.
Heck,
you know,
he's been playing it that way for his whole life.
Yeah, exactly.
And he's done good for himself.
Yeah.
So you can't come in and change it now. Yeah. Why are you there talking about it? Because he knows what he's doing.
Yeah, yeah, exactly.
That's right. What do they always say? He played with like the spoon or the fork.
Yeah, he played with the
was it a knife,
kitchen
or a
knife,
spoon?
A kitchen,
yeah,
knife. Yeah,
yeah,
yeah. And it's like, it was even the guy from U2, Bono. He was like, you know, at first when you hear it, it's like something's off. But as you get to sit with
and
it,
and they're kind of all, I mean,
oh,
some
you
of the,
bend into it.
Yeah, exactly.
You got to open your mind. You,
yeah,
can't be, you can't be one of these people that's like, music has to be this way, and there are rules. There's no rules, you know, and there's not. I don't care what school you go to. That, I mean, you can stick by those rules if you choose to.
Yeah.
But it's just sound. It's wood and metal making sound. You know what I mean? You can,
yeah,
bend it all the hell. How you can do whatever you want to make music out,
that's,
of,
right,
it.
That's right.
Yeah.
You know?
I mean, Tom Morello's made a damn killing off of bending,
why,
the sound anywhere, any way he wants to, you know? I mean, he uses no effects pedals. Well, no, he does.
No, he uses, yeah, whammy for sure.
Yeah, oh, yes, yes.
Because I played a show with him.
Yeah, yeah. And then he uses a wah-wah.
Oh yeah,
for sure.
He's got a little pedal board up there.
Yeah,
the Connor Oberst and the Mystic Valley Band actually opened up for Rage Against the Machine.
No shit.
In, let me,
I was thinking like the Night Watchmen or something.
No,
I wasn't,
let me think.
Rage.
No, no. This was their first show in LA in over 10 years at the Palladium, and this was, I'm trying to remember what year this was. This was probably 2011. Do you remember when all that stuff was going on in Arizona and they were trying to, I can't remember what it was called, but they were basically trying to make it where they could pull over any Hispanic looking person.
Holy shit.
For nothing and card them to see if they have their green card or blue, whatever you have to have, you know,
yeah,
or see if you're actually a citizen or not,
sure,
or whatever. And it was bullshit. It was,
sure,
racist. It,
yes,
was just complete bullshit. So Rage Against the Machine, the singer,
Zach De La Rocha.
Zach De La Rocha. Yeah, very nice guy.
Yeah.
Hung out with us all night that night. Actually stayed up till the sun came up with that guy. But he and Connor had become friends over the years because they're both very political activist with their music.
Yeah. Yes.
And so this thing came on board, the show happened, and Rage Against the Machine was like, we'll fucking do it. And they called it the Sound Strike, something. Nobody play Arizona until they end this.
Mm-hmm.
None, and all these bands signed on board, like, none of them will tour through Arizona until they end it. That was like,
that's awesome.
Yeah.
That's hella cool.
Oh,
yeah.
It was historic. It was,
yeah,
cool as hell. So he asked Connor, Do you have a band that would want to open up for Rage Against the Machine at the Palladium?
Yeah, my band.
Of course, like, well, yeah, you know, the Mystic Valley Band had just kind of finished up all their touring, so we were still pretty hot and fresh. And, man, we did that show. And now, I got to say, the audience was kind of like all Rage fans.
Yeah.
And I think they were like, you know, all right, what the hell are these guys? But I did hear one guy, I brought my whammy pedal that night, and I went wild on it. You know, I went wild.
Yeah.
And I did hear one guy go, I get why they got this band, you know. Like, I bet this is Tom Morella's influence or something,
yeah,
you know. I heard him say that. And anyway, I was like, you know, we rocked it. We played our hardest ones we could. And then I got to watch Rage come out. And I was never like a Rage fan growing up.
Massive.
My best friends all were. Yeah. And I was into it some, but I didn't understand it. I wasn't super political. Now when I hear it, I'm like, oh, like I get it now.
Yeah, you know, Bulls on
Parade.
I get
all of it now, yeah. But I didn't get it then because I was young.
Yeah.
But, you know, man, this show, dude, the power that Zach De La Rocha has, man, controlling that crowd. I mean, I'm talking, they went from being the loudest band in the world to stopping, and Zach started speaking. And it was like you were at the presidential, you could hear a pin drop.
Yeah.
And they all listened to every word he said. And, man, it was so heartfelt and passionate about. And he, and in L.A., their core, hardcore audience, because the Palladium, believe it or not, is small for Rage Against the Machine. You know, and that's a huge venue, but it's small for them in their home base for sure. Yeah. You know, and their first show in 10 years. Yeah. So, man, if you don't think those people bought that ticket within a minute,
hell yeah,
it was sold out probably in minutes. And that was all their hardcore fans. And a lot of their hardcore fans in Southern California are Hispanic and were feeling this racial tension mm-hmm. against them. And, man, when he spoke about that, I mean, it was moving, like truly moving. Yeah. And then he ended it, like, right, you know, he brought it up to this level where everybody was really starting to get into it, and he was starting to shout,
and
you
the
know.
Band just and then back it just into it.
And then it just went, ba-dum, ba-ba-dum, ba-ba-dum. Dude, the whole Bulls room started erupting.
Yes.
Oh, man,
that's awesome.
Whoa, yeah. You know, it was crazy.
Feel the earth shaking a little bit.
I remember back when Rage first started, when their first record came out. I mean, there was nothing like to ears in Columbus, Mississippi. There was we'd never heard anything like that before.
Well, if you look back into the 90s, at the time they came out, there was nobody that sounded like
that. No, and nobody that political that was in the forefront.
Yeah.
You know, because I can remember, I don't know, I'm going to show my age here between you young guys, but like I remember 92, 93 being down at the UNO Lakefront Arena at Lollapalooza when it used to tour, and right before Tool played, Rage Against the Machine took the stage. And I'm 6'3", yeah. You know, so I mean, at that time, I think I've shrunk a little bit since I've got older, my posture's gotten worse, but man, I went into the mosh pit for that show. It was just, the whole crowd was bouncing, even in the back. The people
I'm
who
sure.
weren't in the mosh pit were bouncing. I got pushed to the front, had to be pulled over by a bodyguard or a bouncer or whatever.
Yeah, yeah.
Pulled over and walked across the stage.
Out.
And I'm
yeah.
just the whole time just looking, and Zach's just jumping up and down and right in front of me. And I'm like, oh my God, that guy's so amazing.
Yeah.
Just
like,
so much energy. I mean,
I only imagine it like a Jack White show is like the first time I saw Jack White live, I would have had to throw a rock twice to be able to hit the stage. And it's still like I had earbuds in. And it still hurt.
Really? I get you.
I mean, that's how I imagine Rage Against the Machine just being loud and fucking proud, right?
I see what you're doing right there, because I was gonna say I've never seen the power of a vocalist. The band tries to match that power that he has. And I think Jack White kind of does that as well. The way Jack plays and the way his band, you just watch them. They're all in sync. They're all watching Jack to see what he's going to do next. So they make sure they're on point, you know.
And like most folks don't know that there's an 11, but like Jack and Rage, they know where 11 is, you know.
Oh, yeah, man. They know how to command a crowd, too, with their, you know, presence.
Mm-hmm. That's it.
I mean, that it takes something special to really own the room, you know, and really bring them in. I mean, that's hard to do, you know. I mean, obviously when it's your hardcore fans, it's not as hard. But to get to that place and get to that level, that's very hard, you know.
Yeah.
I think it takes something pretty special, you know.
So is this Blips record, there going to be more Blips records?
Yeah.
Is this like a thing you're going to get into like for sure now? Or
none of us really know, and none of us want to like say or really, you know. I think we're just doing it as long as we're having fun. But we do have another record written already, pretty much. We haven't recorded anything.
Yeah.
But we've got the jams. We're actually going to play a couple tonight.
Cool.
We're going to play some new Blips material.
I was wondering, because you'll be playing for like an hour and a half tonight, and I'm like, the record's like 30-something minutes long.
Are
you going to do some solo stuff?
I bet they're going to stretch them.
Everybody
we're
West
probably
going to
be more
stuff.
Like an hour tonight. I don't know. But we do have one cover, and actually, we have a couple other covers we can pull out if we need to.
What time is that show, by the way?
We start in 20 minutes.
Yeah.
Perfect. Okay.
Yeah. Yeah, we're good. But yeah,
probably need to
go out
there and sound check here in a minute.
Yeah, I think they already did. I'll just kind of get a real quick line check. I'm a line check.
Figure it out
as
we go.
I'm a line check master, man. Hey, I'm sorry, but I'm not going to make sound check. Is there any way I can just line check? You know?
I wanted to ask you this, and this is a little bit on the nerdy side, but just with sitting down with your records, and trying to emulate some of that sound, and I'm beginning to notice that a lot of it is not in standard. What are some of your favorite tunings?
Well, I mean, like I said, open D is very common for me. But I actually, a lot of it I do in standard. I might, like, years ago when I was doing more rock and a little bit more punk kind of stuff, it was standard, but it was tuned down. Mm-hmm. Sometimes a step, sometimes just half a step. Sometimes, you know, I tried a few. I experimented. At some point, I came back up to standard because I would play so... I began playing guitar with so many other people. I realized... basically, I'm lazy, but I just didn't want to keep retuning my guitar every night because I would just play night after night, but it'd be with a different group or a different thing.
Mm-hmm.
So I got back to where I was playing in standard a lot, which now I'm really comfortable at. So mostly that. Sometimes I do open G, too.
Okay, okay.
So that's the third one that I'll throw out.
We had, at the end of the, when James, early James was with us on the podcast, he and I talked about your guitar style and how he was kind of pulled some influence from you. Like, it kind of seems to me, and I'm not a guitar player, I'll claim my ignorance, I can play bass a little bit, you know? I can do a bunch of, like, the first chords of a couple songs, that's about it. But, like, this open-handed just kind of, I can't tell what your right hand is doing when you're playing guitar.
Well, my right hand, yeah.
Are you just strumming with your fingers? I mean, how do you...
So I do a lot of this pinching thing, which
with your index and thumb.
Index and thumb. And then when I do the country, kind of the bonch, 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 I do the bass with the thumb, and I go...
Like on Westfalia.
I go like, yeah, like Westfalia, yeah. I go bonch, like that goes down and back up. So yeah. The up is kind of a... Or the one of them is a scrat, like... So I kind of mute. The chords are partially muted.
Mm-hmm.
They're not fully ringing out, you know. Which the longer you play like that, you get your own little feel. There's times when I let it ring if I want it to be louder in the chorus or something. And there's times when all I do is almost just the bass part and just with a little scratch rhythm.
Yeah.
You know.
So did that style come from anybody, or that's just like you just fucking around on the guitar and one day it just,
man,
that's what you became comfortable with?
I didn't directly learn that from anybody. I just kind of, there was, you know, a few people that I would watch play, and I would watch blues guys on YouTube and stuff. There was a time when it was like after the Mystic Valley Band, when I realized if I wanted to be able to make a living playing music, I had to be able to do shows by myself or with... I needed to be very versatile. And I didn't want to play by myself and suck. You know, I wanted to be able to hold the rhythm and have the whole... I wanted the melody and the everything going at one time. And that's what a lot of those blues players were doing. So that's why I started... Okay, I got to...
Start playing the bass line with your top finger. And,
yeah. And now I... You know, sometimes I'll play without it, but I did at some point start using a little loop pedal to make it even bigger.
To fill it up.
I don't usually use that if I'm by myself, but if I'm doing like some of these long, like I play at Marty's, you know, that's almost a 4-hour gig. So
you gotta stretch it.
Yeah, me and Ross are. I'll get a little loop, loop going over and over.
Yeah.
And you know, people, that's a late night kind of place.
Experimenting with a lot of stuff.
Oh
too,
yeah, and years of experimenting, you know, got me to where, you know, you just learn your things. You cut out some things and you keep some things and you try other things and, you know, over time you just kind of come up with your different little tricks, you know. It's like your little hat tricks that you can pull out if you need to, you know what I mean? And I never had a good voice, so I realized that
I'm going to call bullshit on that too.
Well, thank you.
It fits fucking perfectly with what you do.
And I think it was catered that way.
But it made me want to get good at words so people could follow it rather than, you know, I couldn't just belt out a song like James or Taylor Honeycutt. You know what I mean? I can't sing out like that, so I didn't have that. That wasn't in my pocket. I had no choice. So instead, I did my own thing to where I could still draw the audience in, but do it my own way, you know?
I mean, Ring Around Saturn, pure fucking poetry.
Yeah, thanks.
That is like, I mean, that's like my song. Yeah, that and Westphalia, and I was bitten by a bastard snake. I knew it wasn't a bastard because the snake ain't got no dad. Damn it. That's like, I mean, it's simple as shit. It's like you're talking about a fucking snake, but you're making fun, and it's freaking amazing, you know?
It just put a smile on your face.
Yeah. I like lyrics to be fun and funny, kind of like,
yeah.
You know, sometimes I get bored when the shit's too serious. I mean, I like things to be serious in the deepest meaning of it, but, you know, I like it to be kind of playful.
A little whimsy to it. Yeah.
Yeah, that's the kind of stuff that catches my ear. You know, John Prine is the perfect example of that. He's the master of it. So once I discovered him, I really was like, okay, that's the kind of lyrics I can relate to, you know. I don't know if I fully go, I mean, you know, I like a lot of different styles, but that's certainly a part of, you know, I think stylistically, like I try to add those, you know, comic elements, comic relief to the overall seriousness or whatever.
Yeah.
You know, and Ring Around Saturn's purely playful, you know.
Yeah.
I knew when I wrote it, it was good. I wrote it in one sitting. I just sat there and I wrote it.
You wrote the lyrics first before the guitar?
I wrote it the exact same time. Yeah, I just wrote it and I heard the chords in my head and I knew where to go. It's just a 1-4-5. It's 3 chords. I don't know. I just, as soon as it was done, I was like, how? I cannot believe I did it. Yeah. I showed it to Kate and I was like, I mean, is this good? You know, like, I feel like this is pretty good.
Yeah. Oh, my God.
And you know, she was like, yeah, I like it. You know, I couldn't tell. Honestly, I was like, I don't, maybe it's not, but it seems like a lot of people like it. So,
yeah. Well, good.
Right. Yeah. We are at 7:46.
Yep.
One last question.
Yeah.
Just to talk about, I mean, the Blips has gotten a lot of great press from a lot of different people.
It's amazing.
And whether it Little continues Steven. Or what, yeah. you know, whatever happens is like, I think it left its imprint as far as, I can't tell you how damn proud I am of the Blips.
Man, me too.
It's like, just that's Birmingham, Alabama.
Yeah.
And that is exactly what we needed. And I'm glad y'all waited.
Yeah.
To release it.
Yeah. It seemed like our only option at the time, really. I mean, we could have tried to push it out, but we wouldn't have been able to play at all. You know, it's like, but we, during that time, already had some of these new songs working, so we'll hopefully crank out the second one pretty fast, I hope. But yeah, it's been amazing. I mean, I never would have expected the love that we've gotten off of that, you know, never would have expected it.
Yeah, I mean, every time I see a post, it's like, who's looking at it? And I'm like, oh my Lord.
Yeah, it's crazy. It's like, it really is like that stuff just spirals out of control. Like, but it's weird, but it's like as soon as one bigger name actually says they like it, then all of a sudden all these other
everybody
bigger
likes
names,
like,
it. Because they're like, well, who the hell's this, you know?
Yeah.
Henry Rollins is like, well, Little Steven's listening to it, I'm going to listen to it, you know? Yeah.
Yeah. And they feel okay to talk about it.
Yeah.
You know,
yeah,
like
yeah.
they're not questioning, like,
right.
is this good or is this just me, you know? Or
who was the first one with the big props that you were like, oh my God, did y'all see this?
I mean,
was that Rollins?
Rollins was the first one to come out, but we knew about Little Stevens first.
Yeah, okay.
But that one took longer to roll out. I knew about that like a month and a half before it was going to happen. Well, no. So we knew that Little Stevens started playing it on his show.
Yeah.
But we didn't know it was going to get the coolest song in the world thing.
Yeah.
And then all that, and then just did a big interview for their Coolest Conversations, which is freaking insane. Like, dude, I started scrolling down it.
I saw your post about it. And I looked at it too, dude, and I was like, holy crap.
Legends. The caliber. Just like crazy top motherfuckers on there.
Yeah. Damn.
Sorry to cuss.
No. That's not the first cuss word you've said tonight.
I know. I'm bad. My daughter is just all night long just hitting me. Dad! Swear jar! You know, mom's giving up. She's just like, it's just your dad. How he is. But yeah, man, it's been crazy. So, that Little Steven thing, to me, that's been the coolest by far because, you know, I really like a lot of the stuff they play. Mm-hmm. You know, that's a cool channel.
Yeah.
And all the stuff they just push out and support and represent, to be in there with that is... You know, it's an honor.
To get the coolest song in the world for the week. Shit.
Yeah.
You know?
Yeah. I've never had that before. So.
Yeah.
And one last question. Let's close out on this.
All right.
Is, Taylor, you have released a single, Do Right.
Yep.
What about for the next album? When are you thinking? When is that going to be ready?
I don't know. I got another single ready. I'm probably just going to drop it out in like a week or something. So be ready. I decided I just like releasing them, you know, because I do so many different ways of doing things. But I have thought about it. I've been like, okay, I don't want to give away everything that would be on the record, but I've got a pretty good bag of songs ready to go. And there's a Dead Fingers record fully finished.
Hell yes!
Woo! That's
roll tide. Yes.
Yeah, that's gonna come out this fall. So
oh my gosh!
And I'm very proud of it. I think it's the best one, so, you know.
That's great.
We'll see, but.
For me, doing a show like Indies Only, there's nothing better than, like, prepping for my show all week, and then, like, a Wednesday night, I get a text message from Taylor. It's got a Dropbox link. I'm like, yes! Oh, yes, I got it, yes.
Oh, man, I'm so glad I'm not bumming you out.
No, man, hell no.
It's the same. It's like whenever, like, I play a music and, like, Taylor's
I send it to my people, like, you know, when I can really tell that if people really like it, like y'all with outlets, like, I have my little small list. And, you know, as soon as in the last couple of years how we've gotten to know each other, y'all got added to the list.
Yeah.
So, you know, I send y'all everything when I got it.
Yeah,
you know.
We appreciate that.
Yeah. Dude, I appreciate y'all. Trust me. I appreciate y'all way more than you appreciate me.
I'll tell you, we got a Porch Talk vinyl. I've got an acoustic cut of Do Right that is only going to be on that vinyl. So that'll be dropping in the fall. It'll be sent off to be pressed soon. And
Can't wait.
Anything else to add or subtract, guys? Taylor.
Thanks to Druid City.
Thanks, Bo Hicks, Druid City, Seth, all the wonderful people involved here. We have a blip show to...
Yeah, we got to go to it. I got
to
get another beer.
I got to get a beer and pee, man.
Yeah,
I would like to throw out to Bo Hicks, thanks for these awesome ribs he cooked tonight. They are good.
Kaneka dogs, too.
Yeah.
All right, we're out of here. News and notes. Thank you so much for listening to Porch Talk. If you haven't done so already, I would ask that you would rate and review the show, whatever platform it is that you listen to on. It takes about 10 seconds. You want me to count it down? I ain't doing it to you. We're walking out right now with Taylor Hollinsworth, Man Downtown, off his album, Country Visions. I'll see you next time. Bentonia Blues coming.
How you doing? bad as me. From all my time of walking the line and making all the goodness. I wear cotton my neckties. My boots made of alligator. My leather like a refrigerator. I got a gaze in my good eye. I drink a bud from a percolator. I eat a chicken bone pie pie. And everyone knows that all my clothes are made of goose and silk inside.
This is Scott Campbell from the Stupid Things for Love podcast. I have a 7-year-old son, and the biggest mountain I climb every day is trying to put shoes on this child. And I'm so grateful to Skechers for making the only shoes my son will willingly put on by himself. Their slip-ons are amazing, and he doesn't have to deal with laces. He doesn't have to deal with anything. They come in the perfect color blue. Thank you, Skechers, the comfort technology company. And you can find Skechers everywhere, Skechers.com, a Skechers store, or wherever stylish footwear is sold.